The widespread closing of venues and cancellations of shows has abruptly halted the vibrant Twin Cities live music industry. Without knowing when we can gather again, XL Energy Center and Michelob Golden Light have partnered to bring awareness to the needs of those significantly impacted by this shutdown. Songs for the Cities supports the Twin Cities Music Community Trust, whose vision is to provide assistance to the local live music industry workforce. Visit XLEnergyCenter.com to learn more and to make a donation. Now, let's listen to Songs for the Cities featuring our host, Chris Hockey.
And welcome to the second edition of Songs for the Cities, presented by XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light. My name is Chris Hockey, and thanks for tuning in. I hope you listened to and enjoyed last week's first edition with the fantastic singer-songwriter herself, Kat Perkins. Learned a lot about her, and we plan to learn more about our guest today as well. But quickly, I want to let you know why we're doing this and give you the opportunity, as you're looking at your computer screen right now or your phone screen, to go ahead and donate as we speak. XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light partnered to launch Songs for the Cities to support the Twin Cities Music Community Trust. Fallout for the live music industry is going to be felt for a long time and potentially much longer than even some other industries. You can donate right here by clicking the Donate Now button. It's going to help people of all walks of life who help put on the live music shows you love so much. The live music industry, from the people behind the bar to the people behind the board to the people behind the lights to the people who put the equipment onto the stage, to the artists themselves, like Mr. Michael Shines, who we'll talk to in just a second. So please donate now. If you don't have anything to donate, it's free. Enjoy, listen to Michael's music, go out and see him when we can go to live shows again. But if you got a couple extra dollars, there are a lot of people who could use it. So please click right here on the Donate Now button. And thanks to XL Energy Center, it was their idea to do this to help out the people who normally are putting on the shows inside places like First Avenue and places like XL Energy Center and places like the Varsity and all over the place in the Twin Cities, the big bars, the small bars, the outdoor shows and such. So donate right now, Songs for the Cities. My guest, I'm going to read this because I think this is perfect, was talked about in the Huffington Post. This is what it said about Mr. Michael Shines. Stylistically, he's difficult to pigeonhole because his sound amalgamates many different flavors, blending R&B, pop, and blues into awesomely immediate melodies, evocative lyrics, and contagious rhythms. Michael Shines really has it going on. That's well said. Michael Shines, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, man. I'm better. I'd better be talking to the great Chris Lightning Hockey. Your middle name's Lightning, right?
Yeah, it's going to be now. I mean, I don't know why my mom and dad messed up and didn't make it Lightning to begin with. I don't know what they were thinking.
What were they thinking? No, I'm good. I'm good, man. You know, like we were right in the middle of the city and we moved out to the country. Kind of the timing of it was almost spiritual because we were supposed to move out like March 16th, like right at the pinnacle of when like the hysteria for all this was at its height. And we offered to move in like a month early. And so we're out here settled with the river in the backyard and the lake across the street. And it's way better than what would be downtown St. Cloud right now, which is, I guess, the New York Times is writing articles about our city and stuff like that. So it's good to be out here in the country with the family. We got the brother over quarantining with us and some chickens in the yard and the horse barn just down the road. And so everything is peaceful, and I'm writing a lot of new music in the studio. And so it's about as good as it could be considering the circumstances that we're all going through right now.
No doubt. Michael Shines, again, it's S-H-Y-N-E-S, by the way, if you're looking up his music, and I'm sure you are right now. And you can click right here to find more information and listen to the songs we're going to be featuring a little bit later. But I want to get to know the man behind the music. I've said this a million times to a million people, and I think you know this, and I don't mind saying it to your face. I have before. You're one of the great songwriters that I know, man. You're a fantastic artist, and you write in all different genres, and that's part of the reason I love to listen to your music, and I'm excited every time you send me something new to my inbox, because I never really know what it's going to sound like or where it's going to come from. But before we delve deeply into that, let's talk about for a moment the reason we're doing this podcast. You are a working musician, man, and I mean that in every sense of the words. You play all over the place, whether it be with the giant band or acoustically. How are you dealing with all of this, with not playing shows? And by the way, your musicians whom you employ, how are you helping them deal with this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think dealing with it is just not having another choice but trying to find a way, which I think as musicians we've kind of adapted ourselves to. I mean, I think back to right when I started, I would take any gig I could get, you know, $50 for 4 hours in a bar tab, and and take it happily. So now, you know, I'm doing a lot more, thankfully, with the Poland Komodo thing that launched my name out to kind of producers all over the world who now can hire me to sing on their tracks. So that's a stream of revenue, studio revenue that's coming in, and then I'm able to license some of my music. But obviously, it's a pretty big hit when your whole summer, which for me is probably the busiest time of the year with festival season, wedding season, you know, and, you know, outdoor music season happening here in Minnesota, to have the whole summer wiped out is really tough for all of us. But what I'm seeing it as is an opportunity to build a catalog of music that in the long term will potentially earn me revenue, even not immediately. So I'm just trying to be in the studio. I think I've had over 20 songs started and we finished over 10. And I have a full-length album in two that was supposed to release this last week at the Varsity Theater, a vinyl release show, and that obviously didn't happen. So there's a lot of music, you know, in the vault, and that's the only way I can really approach it is to see it as a long-term thing, because there's not a lot of short-term, as we know, things to do right now.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of your favorite clubs as well at some point if we got time to get to all that. But before we delve too deeply into where you're at now, let's talk about where you started. It's a, again, your bio on your webpage, michaelshines.com, is great because the first line sort of says it all. The fact that Michael Shines is a Midwest-born singer-songwriter with a platinum record in Poland, in many ways sums up the unlikelihood of his career perfectly. We're going to talk a lot about Poland, but tell me about the city you grew up in and where you're from.
Yeah, I'm from Little Falls, Minnesota. I'll actually be back there on the 24th of May playing for the graduates, which I hurt for them. Mm. You know, the kids that weren't able to, you know, have a, you know, traditional graduation ceremony or have prom or really tie that bow on the high school experience. But basically, like, I was not a music person at all, almost all the way my senior year of high school, and that was more of a necessity thing because I just hung out with a bunch of guys that played music, and so I had never been in a band. I took 1 year of piano in sixth grade, never was in choir, but they just had some friends move away, and they're like, hey, we need somebody to sing, and I just hung around them. So that's how I became the singer of this band called Tomorrow's Forgotten was our name. My senior year of high school, we wanted to be Quiet Drive so bad. Oh. I call us Diet Quiet Drive when people ask what our sound was like, because we definitely were not as good. That was kind of my only musical experience while in Little Falls was just that 1 year before I moved away to college. And then I pirated some recording software. I bought a computer mic from Best Buy and I just fell in love with recording and like putting something down and then being able to hear it back. And so sometimes kids would go out my freshman year of college and I just sit in the dorm room and be addicted to recording and playing these things back. But my mom was kind of musical. She could sing. My dad, I stood next to him in church. I don't think I got my vocal talents from my dad because he was pretty flat when he would sing in church on Sundays. But they were super supportive. And that was the cool thing is like my whole life took a turn when I discovered music, but my parents were never put any expectations on me. They were just like, hey, if this moves you, if you believe in it, if this is your dream, then go chase it. So that's kind of how it started, I guess.
Hmm. You talk about taking that 1 year of piano. When does learning to play instruments come into all of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it was the fact that I didn't love some of the music that my band was making. So I was a singer in this band for probably like 4 or 5 years. And then we kind of broke up and I was just in bands in general. And then I was like, well, I feel like the only way I'm going to be able to make the music I want is if I can control the songwriting process and be able to learn an instrument or instruments. So that was when I picked up acoustic guitar in order to try and do that. Piano was just too tough for me to go left hand, right hand, damper pedal, stay in tempo, whereas when I picked up a guitar, I found that my strumming hand was pretty natural. Like, it would just stay in time of whatever I was trying to do. So all I really had to do was think about my fretting hand, but I didn't know chords or anything, and I loved, like, the Goo Goo Dolls. And so I started to fall in love with the sound of, like, open tunings. So what I would do is just take an acoustic guitar and tune all the strings so they sounded really pretty open, And then I was a math guy, not a note guy.
Yeah.
But I could remember even an odd fret. So I basically tried to remember all the chords that I was learning in these open tunings by remembering where I put my hands, and it had nothing to do with notes. And I still don't really know notes very well. And so I taught myself, and I wrote a couple albums just with open tunings, and then I eventually learned standard tuning and like basic chords. But a lot of it was just trial and error, because I think when you're writing songs, knowing too much can be a little bit detrimental. But I love keeping the mystery alive of like discovering things, which so I almost maintain a little bit of ignorance in the music as far as theory and things like that, so I can keep that mystery alive.
I love it. I love being able to think outside the box, because you don't even know the box exists. That makes a lot of sense to me. But tell me a moment ago, you said something, and I want to make sure I heard you correctly. Did you say you know the math of the guitar more than you know the notes? Is that the word you use, the math of it?
Yeah, I don't even know why I said it that way.
No, like, dude, that's fascinating, because there is math to the music, and it's one of the things that I've tried so hard to understand as a small-time songwriter myself. I read a book from Bob Dylan where he talked about when he learned to understand the math of songwriting, it changed everything for him. Is that something that came naturally to you?
I think it was just the only option for me. Like, I knew that I wasn't going to learn it the traditional way. And I had my gifts in school where I was a really good math student and I had a great memory. So I would always cram for tests like right before. And I could remember a lot of things, you know, pretty well. I could still tell you some of my best friends from middle school, their phone numbers. I have a very numerical memory. And so that was just the way I did it, where I would just be like, it was on the third fret and my fingers were two frets apart. It was all a numerical way of learning. And then you actually come to learn that there is the Nashville number system, and then the 1-4-5 and all that is a big part of it. But back then I didn't know that. It was just like my individual way of learning. And then people are always like, hey, will you teach me guitar lessons and stuff? I'm like, you do not want to learn the way that I learned. Like it makes no sense. It'll be like Japanese to you.
It makes sense to you, though, and that's all that matters, and that's great. And again, I think that the fact that you, as you mentioned, you don't live inside any box allows you to write songs in many different genres, many different types of songs, and I think that's a fascinating thing, especially in this modern world where people have every style of music and every genre of music on their listening device.
Yeah, I think, and it's just a way that I'm able to stay interested, you know, like in what I'm doing. You know, I definitely know there's an advantage to fostering and creating a sound and bringing that to the forefront, and that's, you know, can become financially very lucrative and in terms of building an audience, very lucrative. That just wasn't the path that inspired me. What inspires me always is hearing music and being like, what would I sing over that? What melody would I? And that seems to be pretty wide in terms of different genres, and it keeps me engaged, whereas if I'm doing too much singer-songwriter stuff, I'm like, okay, I'm bored with the acoustic guitar right now. Or if I'm doing too much pop stuff, I'm like, there's not enough heart or lyrical content or story in this. I want to get back to some story music for a while. So it kind of insulates me from having a lot of writer's block. It enables me to work with pretty much anybody, like playing with, you know, Paul Detelm Stretch the other night and his blues rock kind of vibe. It's just cool to have the full palette and the full range of people around you and be able to pull inspiration from everywhere. And so I think that's just the way I always want to do it, as opposed to being packaged as an artist, as one, you know, kind of sound or genre.
Which makes perfect sense. Again, Michael Shines is my guest, michaelshines.com, and it's S-H-Y-N-E-S, by the way. You're listening to Songs for the Cities. Do not forget, please, you can donate. Thanks to our friends at XL Energy Center and Mick Goldenlight, right here on this webpage, you can donate to Twin Cities Music Community Trust to help out the people who put on the live shows we miss so much and we're going to get to at some point. But back to Michael Shines. Talk to me about, I guess, the left turn where you go from being somebody who plays music on the weekends to somebody who is really focused on being a singer-songwriter or being a music writer or being a musician as a livelihood.
Yeah, I'd say there were like two spots. So when I was in college, I got a work study position at the mental health. Actually, it was more of a social work position. There's the St. Cloud Children's Home, and we helped out kids that were, you know, physically, sexually abused, chemically dependent, suffered from mental illness. And so I got a job over there as a work-study position, but I still kept it after I graduated college. And what it was an on-call position. And I loved the job. It was really, really great. And I think it shaped the father that I wanted to be, the husband that I wanted to be, all these things later on. It made me, you know, a better person. And I would work and pick up shifts during the week, and then I'd play a couple gigs on the weekend. And then there was one show I played at like a deck bar up in Alexandria, and I made more in one night, 3 hours of performing, than I'd ever made working 80 hours over a 2 week span. And then, like I said, being the math guy that I am, like doing that math in my head, I'm like, well, I got to just find a way to make this work, because I clearly have a lot more ability to potentially generate income playing music in a shorter period of time. And then if I'm able to free up more time, I can write more. So that was the moment when I kind of quit the job. But also, I should say that I met my wife at this job. Mm. And it was an intense job. We had a locked-in facility with magnetic doors, and there was one time when she was being like thrown around by her hair by somebody in it. And I was like, I can no longer be objective and follow the protocol if I'm working with my wife here. So it was also wanting to take the leap of music, but also realizing, like, cause you're not allowed to go on the offensive. And I had to separate those two, cause I'm like, this is my, you know, this is my wife, which we ought to keep all under wraps when I work there. And so that was the leap of doing it full time. And then in terms of building it into a ticketed audience, the Poland thing launched so much, as far as, which is weird because it was an EDM pop thing, but it just opened up a huge ticket buying audience for me that kind of had my back, and I was able to, and it also, like I said, given that it was a pop EDM tune, it kind of let me know that people would support me no matter what those genre explorations I wanted to do were, like you're talking about. Before, I was mostly doing a lot of singer-songwriter stuff, and then when that happened, I'm like, oh sweet, people got my back if I'm going to do pop or R&B or, you know, EDM or whatever, and that's great. And so I started making all those different styles of music. Modern 80s music is like my favorite right now. So that was the more just devoting myself to my craft and having this realization that, you know what, if I just kind of feed this machine that's kind of been jump-started by this success overseas and continue to work really hard and just stay genuine and stay humble, then I think everything else will kind of accomplish itself. And thankfully for me and for my family and being out here at this new spot that, you know, the house that music built, I say, it all kind of worked out that way, and knock on wood, it will continue to go that way.
I want to talk more about Poland in a moment, but I want to go back to your time there at that job. How did that inform your songwriting? And the reason I ask that is because I find that a lot of your music has a lot of empathy in it. And I would guess that you have to have a lot of empathy for the people that you're seeing and the life stories you're watching lived out in front of you, sad or otherwise. Yeah. But I would guess that was pretty heavy, and that had a lot to do with some of the songs you've written.
Oh yeah, man! It was absolutely huge in terms of empathy, you know, because you're watching confused, you know, teenagers, which I was a confused teenager, you know, that sometimes felt, you know, really bad about myself or had these issues, but I had two really supportive parents and a couple, you know, awesome brothers and ways to get by. And some of these kids have nobody. And some of these kids, you know, mentally, you know, are really struggling, or they just hate themselves. And that was when I was introduced to this concept of self-harm that I initially didn't understand, but then you start to learn and understand it more when you realize what these kids are going through, but they just want to hurt themselves so they can feel something for all the pain that they've had to endure. And so for me, being, you know, somewhat of an emotional sponge, where I try to absorb it. It just kind of happens. The energy of those around me. It was definitely something that influenced the music that I wanted to create and made me. Yeah, I wrote several songs, probably four or five for those kids, it changed me in a lot of ways.
Speaking of changing you in a lot of ways, let's move now to the Poland situation. The song, of course, is Died in Your Arms Tonight. Huge song here. Can you tell me how you go from being a guy in Minnesota who just throws something on the internet to a guy who's standing on stage in front of thousands of people in, I don't even know how you say it, Gdansk, Poland? I don't even know how you say the word.
Yeah, Gdansk was like 30 or 40,000, and then Zakopane was madness. That was the New Year's Eve one for 73,000 people. I didn't have any track record or experience level or any business being in front of that many people because I just had no experience. But luckily, I had so many reps in environments that are a lot more challenging than that to me. You know, like,
sure.
You know what I'm talking about when you're playing the loud bar or you can't get people's attention. That's the toughest gig for me when you start from a negative and you have to try to pull people in. If I'm standing in front of people that are there to listen, even if it is thousands of people, to me, that's a lot easier than those gigs that we had to do coming up and, you know, with a bunch of drunk people around or whatever. So I just kind of did the thing, man. I tried not to overthink it. I would think of myself as I am one thing. The crowd is one thing. We're equals. If you're going to yell mean things at me, I won't even understand it because I don't speak Polish. So there's not a lot of risk there. And just went out there and did it. But it's super funny, like the juxtaposition of me, like wearing like a flannel shirt and jeans. And like, I think I still have my wallet in my back pocket when I'm, this thing is being shot and aired on like their biggest TV station. I just didn't put a lot of thought into the actual aesthetic of it. I just was trying not to run into the dancers in track jackets and deliver the song. And luckily it worked out okay.
Again, it's an incredible story. And there are a lot of people listening to this right now who don't know how you got from A to B though. Tell me the process of actually singing the song and why it became such a hit in Poland.
Yeah. So like I had a harmony singer in my band. Her name was Megan Lacey. And she's like, Michael, I know you love working out of the studio even more than performing live sometimes. So there's a website called soundbetter.com where you can put up a profile and people can hire you from all over the world. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. And so I did that. And the second job that comes through the site is from an alias account called Falcon X. And they're like, hey, we're remaking this cover of an 80s song called I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. And like, that's sweet. I love that song. And so at that time it was just like, I want to, you know, I'm trying to make some quick cash here. I send you a quote of a price of what it's going to cost for me to sing it. And then I'll send you the vocal stems across the ocean and you mix it into a track, end of transaction. I don't know if I'll ever hear the song or hear anything about it again was my mentality. And then, so I did that, sent them the tracks, which actually I tried to back out of it a couple times they reminded me of because I didn't think I was doing a good job. But they're like, no, we really like it. Keep going. And they had hired 9 singers to sing it. And I guess they liked my version the most. And so I sent them the files. And then like 3 or 4 months later, they put out the music video, which they're like, it's getting 100,000 hits every day. And I was like, that's awesome because nothing I've ever done has done anywhere near that. But then I pull up the music video. And it's just like this gorgeous world champion pole dancer, like dancing around a pole, like the whole video. So I'm like, well, yeah, guys, like maybe they like the song, but like maybe they're tuning in for a whole different reason. But it turns out they did because the song was also blown up at radio at the same time, which I wasn't aware of. And what's their big stations? Radio Z and RMF FM, you know, which are the two big stations there. And it ended up going, I think it's either triple platinum or diamond now. And it's just pretty surreal, man. Like, Spotify, I guess, bought Sound Better. So I'm doing a story for Spotify now too on this same thing. And they're super interested in it. So the story of this, I think, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's a really cool story. And that has opened so many doors for me to where then people are like, the story opens the door, but then they hear the other music or the other things that I'm creating. And they're like, there's something here too. And that's, I've been so grateful for it for that reason.
When you have that kind of success, is there a feeling of desperation where you wake up in the middle of the night and you're like, I've got to capitalize on this. This is my break. How do I do this?
I think I have been, I shouldn't say blessed, but I have this equal fear of tremendous success or failure. So it's like, I'm equally afraid of being, I don't know. Yeah. It's this weird thing. So what I will say is that when I got off the stage in Gdansk or Zakopane, I was like, that was cool. I was like, I don't feel like I need to necessarily do that again, but it will always be cool to say that I did it. So it was never like a feeling of, I have to play for 70,000 people every night. That was never my mentality. I've always wanted this kind of in-between career. The careers that I'm most envious of are like the Amos Lees and the David Grays and those type of folks that can like fill a theater anywhere but still somewhat live anonymously or like have their own studios and produce their own records and not have these big teams of people that are trying to influence them or not have to be on social media constantly responding to comments or trying to build their audience. I love the folks that just kind of put out the music and that's the legs for what they're doing. And that's kind of what I'm trying to build now is the career that I envision making me happiest in my head and also mentally as well as I can be. Cause lately I've been like the days where I delete the social media apps off my phone are the best days of my life. And the days where I'm on them all the time are the days where I start to feel anxious or I start to feel sad or I start to compare myself to other people. And so I realized that building my career that way is not going to be a good thing for me or for my role as a father or husband or, you know, any of that. So, I'm not too worried about that, but I totally get what you're saying. There's always that fear of like, when am I going to fade off into anonymity? When are people going to stop caring? When are people going to stop showing up to shows? It's every artist's worst fear.
Sure.
But I try to block it out. You know that world.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, and again, for me, it's I just don't want to waste an opportunity. I don't mind. You know, if something's handed to me, that's great. I just want to make sure I take advantage of it. So that's I completely get what you're saying. Right? And you know what? I want to say this. I think your music's great, man. I think your songwriting is spectacular. I've told you that a million times. The thing for me is I want people to hear it. I want it to be out there so people everywhere can hear, whether it makes you a billionaire or whether it doesn't. Is one thing, but the music deserves to be heard, and that's why we're here right now. So let's play a couple of songs and talk about it, shall we? The first song I want to play is a song called Misfit Toys. Talk to me about this song before we play it.
Yeah, this is like that straight up like pop, like something, you know, some songs I write because I'm like, oh, this is a good song. Other songs I'm like, this is what I would want to seek out or something I would want to listen to. It's John Mayer who said, it is in my failure to sound like my heroes that allows me to sound like myself. And so this was just a tune where I'm like, I love this vibe of music that's coming out right now. I want to sound like that. And a cool thing was, you know, Jason Shomer pretty well. He's a stand-up comic.
Sure.
And we did a series of Christmas shows and we were going to do a remake of this, the Island of Misfit Toys. Was that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? We're going to do a remake of that. And somehow that got into my subconscious to where when I was writing lyrics for the song, I like thought about that phrase, you know, Misfit Toys. And that was kind of the origin. And it's just a song about there are days, I mean, this first verse is kind of extreme, but like there are days where I really just don't like myself or I look in the mirror and I don't like what I see. And I imagine there's a whole community of us out there that have this, you know, self-loathing tendency. But if we were all together, we would support each other because we all know what that's like. And all just surrounding ourselves with people that all feel like misfits like that. And together we wouldn't feel like misfits if we were all around each other. And that's kind of this song.
Yeah, that's Michael Shines. And this is Michael Shines' song, Misfit Toys.
Broken hearted girls and boys. Don't need no captain on the side of me.
again, that was Misfit Toys from Michael Shines. And check out all his music and all his info on michaelshines.com. That's S-H-Y-N-E-S. Michael, another song that I want to play for the people out there today, and I want to learn more about it from you as well, is a song called To the River. Can you talk to me about that one?
Well, yeah, I picked this one, Hawk, because you like this one, right?
Yeah,
this
very much.
This is one you dig. But yeah, so this song came about in a way that I would have never written it had there not been some external, you know, forces at work. And basically what that was is I went over to Appleton, which is right by Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I played like a 60th birthday party. I was filling in for Megan, the same person who recommended Sound Better to me. And I really bonded with this couple, and at the end of the party was all of us. They were all sitting in couches around me, and I was playing Hallelujah in the center of them. And it was a really cool experience, but I didn't know it was going to become more than that. And then I had a show out there again in Appleton, and they showed up. And they're like, after the show, they're like, you know, we really just believe in you. We want to help you with recording. And I was like, okay, I don't necessarily know what that means, but thank you very much. And then I had also just met on the day prior to them saying they want to help me with recording, I met this guy, Lauren Humphrey, who runs the Enchanted Barn in Hillsdale, Wisconsin, this beautiful venue. And he's like a huge music fan. And he's like, we don't do a lot Sunday through Thursday. We have a lot of, you know, weddings and stuff, Fridays and Saturdays out here. And I had always romanticized the idea of going out in the middle of nowhere with like no cell service with a band, making a record the old fashioned way, where you're capitalizing on the energy and the synergy happening in the room. And there's just not a lot else to think about because you're just out in the middle of the country. And so as I'm driving back the 6 hours, from Appleton, I'm connecting these two ideas. I'm like, it almost felt spiritual. I'm like, did I just find the venue for where I want to make this record and the investors to back it on back-to-back days?
Wow.
And then I get back to Minnesota and I write this couple an email. I'm like, you know, I don't want to overstep. I don't know what you meant when you said you wanted to help me record. And then just like, they're just like, hey, just tell us your idea. Like, and we'll tell you if we can do it. And so I'm like, yeah, I want to go out and, you know, make this record and at this barn and here's what it would cost. And I gave them two amounts and one was $2,000 less than the other. And they immediately wrote back and said, we're in for the higher of those two amounts.
Wow.
And they also said, we don't want you to pay us back. We don't want to own any of it. We just believe in what you're doing. We've had people do wonderful things for us throughout our lives, and we want to do the same thing for somebody else, which was just, I mean, you know, puts tears in your eyes. So basically, what happened then was, I talked to Lauren and we got the venue. But the only thing that the couple asked for was they're like, hey, we run this little charter riverboat tour company in Appleton called Fox River Tours. Like, would you write a song about the river? And I'm like, well, that's a very small thing that you're asking for. And you're giving me a very large sum of money, which makes it feel like there's a lot of pressure, you know,
yeah,
in that scenario. And I was like, yeah, I'll try. And so that was it. That was the song I wrote for them, you know, about the river. And they loved it so much that they are opening a little, a bistro too, and naming it after this song.
Wow.
And so it's I actually really find a lot in it for myself, because I always say I write my best music when I'm close to a body of water, and I do my best thinking when I'm staring out at a body of water. So it's something that wasn't hard for me to get into the headspace to write.
This is one of my favorite Michael Shine songs. This is called To the River.
To the river, to the river we go, leave our worries on the shore and drift away on the river. On the river we know, sometimes the perfect words are never said. I spilled my coffee, I don't feel like talking, my worries just keep growing by the day. Need a moment where the green and blue appear, to spin a rock and watch the ricochet. To the river, to the river we go, leave our worries on the shore and drift away. On the river we know, perfect words are left unsaid. You could change your mind when you're intertwined with the water and the waves. Doctor gave, and with that old fishing pole, I still catch him by the bucket full. The kids are helping on the grill and sneak a taste to the river. To the river we go, leave our worries on the shore and drift away. Perfect words are never said. You could change your mind when you're intertwined with the water and the waves. Find this place before you end your days. And if you see me out there, wave hello.
And that was, again, To the River from Michael Shines, my guest here on Songs for the Cities. Don't forget, please go ahead, and if you got a moment and you got a little extra change, donate right now to help out all the people who help you enjoy live music at so many spots around the Twin Cities and beyond. Songs for the Cities brought to you by XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light. Before we played that song, Michael, you talked about that you were kind of given an assignment, as one way to say it, I guess. I'm sure you're asked all the time by people who are fascinated by songwriters. How does it happen? Do you get the words first? Do you get the music first? I get asked that as well from time to time. For me, there's no one answer. Is it the same for you?
Absolutely. It's not. Like, inspiration is kind of from everywhere. I will say that I generally have to be inspired musically first. Sometimes a phrase or a song title will come along, but most of the time it'll be, strumming around on an acoustic till you arrive on something. You're like, oh, there's something there. And then you almost sing subconsciously over it until you find a melody that you like. And then the melody becomes words and the words become a song. But I'll take it from, a drum groove. I'll take it from a sample, from sitting down with like Ted Manderfeld or my keys player, Andre Rodriguez. And they just start playing something. It's everywhere. The world is pretty musical, to me, where I hear songs probably more often than I would like to when I'm trying to just focus on being out in the yard with my kids and stuff. It's like you have to actively shut off that part of your brain sometimes because it doesn't know when it's off the clock.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Michael Shines at michaelshines.com. Again, S-H-Y-N-E-S. Go see him when we can go see music again. Reach out to him, by the way, at michaelshines.com. There's a contact thing right there. There's plenty of music being posted all the time from you on your website. And I'll say this again, Michael, if you were being paid on pure talent and great songwriting, you'd be a gabillionaire, man. I think you're great, and I'm glad we got this opportunity to share a little bit of your music with a great amount of people out there who I know are going to love it. Thank you for your time, man. I'm a fan. You know that.
Thanks, Chris. I'm a fan of you, man.
And once again, you've been listening to Michael Shines on Songs for the Cities, presented by XL Energy Center and Mick Golden Light. Just a great guy and a fantastic, fantastic songwriter. Thanks again to XL Energy Center for a great idea. Loving the idea of getting to know these local songwriters and musicians a little bit better as we go through this time of quarantine. Once again, my name is Chris Hockey, and you've been listening to Songs for the Cities. Thanks to Mick Golden Light and XL Energy Center. We'll talk to you next time.